The following programming is sponsored by Bishop Mary Enterprises, LLC. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Real. Real. Relaxed. Relaxed. But relevant. But relevant. She's an absolute professional with a homegirl feel. Welcome to the Bishop Mary Show with Bishop Mary Foy Palmer, where she will discuss both religious and secular topics with various guests from all walks of life. So thanks for tuning in to the Bishop Mary Show. And now, here's Bishop Mary.
And top of the morning to you. Good morning, good morning, good morning. Alrighty. It's all right. It's Monday morning. That's my boy. But that normally doesn't happen. I'm here with my co-host, Brother Marcus. Good morning.
Yes, we are here. How are you? How are you? How are you? Welcome to the Bishop Mary Show, everybody. We're glad to be here. How was your weekend?
Oh, we'll talk about that in a minute.
All right.
All right. But we're going to get started with this message.
Hundreds of shooting incidents and multiple victims. Homicides that were senseless, cold, intentional, killing our men, women, and children in the African American communities. The question is, am I my brother or sister's keeper? Have we considered each other as neighbors? We can wait for someone to come in and save us, or we can save ourselves. The violence must end. Do your part.
That's right,
hey,
you can win all the time.
And I am hippopotamus happy to have one of our senior statesmen. We might as well call him, like we do in the clergy world, we call them the seasoned fathers because they've been there, done that, and they know all about it. And this is former Congressman Bob Brady, who is still actively involved, and he was a U.S. representative from 1998 to 2019. And he leads. He is the chairman.
That's right.
I hear him when they see him in the room. Mr. Chairman.
That's right.
Of the Democratic City Committee. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes,
yes sir. We can hear you. Thank you so much for joining us. I know we have had a whirlwind with this election. Lord knows it was a whirlwind. And some people don't understand the difference between the state committee and the city committee. So would you just educate us this morning?
Well, the city committee comprises of everybody who lives in the city of Philadelphia. And the state committee is the whole state, you know, all the other counties. There's 67 counties, including Philadelphia. So the state committee is all of the other counties, Montgomery, Bucks, Lancaster, Delaware, you know, Allegheny, Westmoreland, all the other counties, it's in the state committee. And we have our own, and all the other counties have their own committee also. And we have our own city committee in the city of Philadelphia.
So when we are talking about the Democratic City Committee, which is Philadelphia, you all work in tandem with other counties in order to comprise of the state committee?
Yes, we do. We all try to work together. Absolutely.
Okay, because we did have our Democratic state chairman on Senator Sharif Street a little while ago, right before the election. And of course, you know, Pennsylvania is the hotbed. It's the one that most people said was going to make or break the election. And we are now in the middle of a recount. How pivotal are those election ballots, and how much of from Philadelphia are was needed in order to hopefully get victory?
Well, you know, the problem I have is that we want people to vote. And then if they don't sign the ballot in the right proper place, if they don't put it in an envelope, or if they don't date it, I mean, you're taking the taking their right away from voting, you know. And our Supreme Court, in their wisdom, did rule that if you don't date the envelope, if you don't sign the envelope, the outside envelope, then your vote doesn't count. And I don't really know about that. And then, you know, we've been getting blamed, or not blamed, we've been getting accused of being people that cheat. We don't cheat. Nobody cheats in the city of Philadelphia. We don't do that. You know, our commissioners are honorable. Our three commissioners, one's a Republican, two are Democrats. They're honorable, and they have all people down the city committee, and there's a whole bunch of people watching and whatever. There's no need to cheat. We turn out good enough numbers. And unfortunately, again, it wasn't enough to swing the rest of the part of the state. You know, we always tell us that Philadelphia has to get so many numbers, mm-hmm. high numbers, to be able to compensate for the rest of the part of the state that doesn't do well. Actually, they told us we needed 64% those that think they know. We actually turned out 67%. And the city of Philadelphia, we were number one performance city in the United States of America. The rest of the country, they elected Donald Trump. All the swing states went for Donald Trump. Unfortunately, Pennsylvania, he won Pennsylvania, not because of Philadelphia. I mean, we got 749,000 votes for him, you know, and 740 votes. Joe Biden the last time only exceeded that by 9,000. So we did the best. We did as much as we can. There's only a 2% difference between 2020 and 2024. But, you know, to Kamala Harris's credit, I mean, she got thrust into this for maybe like, 100 days or something, you know. Mm-hmm. And she did the best she could. I don't believe it was her fault. I think that she may have been ill-advised in the campaign of what the issues were. And as we all know it, you know, look, people care about abortion, naturally, no question about that. And we care about the borders, naturally, no question about that. But the main thing people cared about, James Carville said it a long time ago, and it keeps ringing true, is the economy, stupid, you know. And we didn't address the economy. And you know, people care about the border, they care about abortion, but they care mostly about when they go to the store. And eggs and gas and cheese and milk are cost a little bit more. And we had to address that, and we didn't, and he did, and it was the economy. People vote their pocketbooks, and that's just what happened this election, throughout the whole country, by the way.
Wow. I love the way in which you summarize that, because mm-hmm. a lot of folks want to throw mud and sling, like we have a tendency to do, particularly when we may be a poor loser. But I think that you make a very valid point that people were more concerned about the economics and what was going to change versus whether or not it's the border or it's education or other things that do matter, but not as prevalent as you said about those day-to-day things that
right.
we have to worry about or be concerned about, especially when it's going to increase our poverty ratio.
And I have a quick question for you, and I'm hoping that Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Go ahead,
I just want to emphasize, you know, border matters. You know, we don't have any borders but the scoop going the Delaware. But it matters. People care about that. Abortion naturally matters. No question about that.
Yes.
And it affects a whole lot of people. And it's extremely important. But everybody goes to the store. Everybody worries about the economy. Mm-hmm. Everybody looks at their paycheck, maybe not reaching as much as it should. And that affects every single person, and that was the issue that I think that we didn't really push hard enough to mm-hmm. let people know that it's going to get better. We're going to be okay, and things are getting better, by the way.
And Speaking of things getting better,
I'm sorry. So you have a question?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Speaking of things getting better, do you feel like voters are being disenfranchised by the meaningless requirements that has no bearing on a voter's eligibility to impact you know, what's going on.
Well, yeah, anytime you do any kind of impacting and try to restrict people from voting, whether they signed a ballot, whether they didn't date a ballot, you know, whether they didn't register. I mean, we should have the same day registrations. I mean, if you could, you know, you have to register so many days before an election, but people went to the polls and wanted to vote and just didn't register, you know, but we should have people ready to register than them, whether they're registered Democrat or Republican. I mean, we talk about the low turnout, which is, we're at 67%, which is, what that means is like another like 30-some percent didn't come out to vote, you know, which is wrong. I mean, mm-hmm. voting is not a privilege, a right. People died for that right, died for us to be able to vote. And we should do that. But then you put some hurdles in front of them, and that doesn't make any sense. I mean, people should be able to register. I understand that. But just you want to register, maybe they can register at the polls, you know, when they come, when they go vote. And you're right. We shouldn't put any hurdles in front of people, whether they didn't sign the ballot, whether they didn't date the ballot, you know. Mm-hmm. Now, let me tell you something. They are confusing. Mail ballots can be confusing, especially for our seniors. You know, it's a little confusing when they get that ballot. We need to simplify it better, make it easier.
Absolutely. And I had to do an emergency ballot because I had to go out of town during the primary. And so I went to the Election Resource Center at 4,000 block, I think it is, of Market. And thankfully, I was able to go in. I was able to get emergency ballot because I had to be out of town on Monday and would not be returning until Thursday. And I did not want to miss my opportunity to vote. Thank God for what the city has done in having satellite offices and how that has helped. Was that something that will continue, or will it just be something that's highlighted when there might be a major or general election?
No, I believe it'll continue. Our commissioners do a great job, all three of them, Democrat and two Democrats, Marsha Beer, Lisa Daly, and Scott Bluestein, Republican. They do their part. They put like a 10 or 11 satellite offices to not inconvenience the people that have to take a bus, go all in town. You know, that's almost a toll tax they have to pay to go vote, mm-hmm. because you got to pay for bus fare, whatever. But they put the satellite offices all over the city, and I do believe that they're going to stay there. I do hope that they're going to stay there. Again, make it convenient for people to come and vote, as it was for you.
Yes, and actually one of my listeners ended up saying that they understand it may not be open all the time, but they do hope that it will be, because we have an election every 6 months, mm-hmm. here in Pennsylvania. We're voting every 6 months, whether it's April and May or November. So what we need to do is to know that these offices will still be going on and may open at a particular time, like the IRS. Yeah. You know what I mean? Nobody likes the IRS, but
I like them. We do right by them.
You know, but they want to help you. Yes, sir.
You're right about the IRS. I have a lot of problems with them. I just received a rebate, a tax return from 2022. You believe that?
Oh.
They don't let me wait 3 years when I got to pay my taxes.
Don't you know?
You're absolutely right.
They're going to come after you, boy. Let me tell you, you don't want those letters. But now, as the chairman I know that. Well, you know, they got to get themselves together. These are our tax dollars. Let me be quiet. I'll hush up. As our city chairman,
that's a whole other show.
Yes,
you back to talk about that, particularly with your experience in the Congress. And I want to lean on that a little bit, given what is going to be happening come January. And it seems like we are having a Republican Senate and a Republican House. And I don't know if you served any time in your many years, the time where that might have been the case. How can our representatives, how can we still get some of our agenda passed through to be able to look for the little person? Because everyone's nervous. Everyone's concerned. There's even talk this morning about the Department of Education being wiped out. I mean, what words can you give that will be able to encourage someone who's listening, who's really concerned about, does this mean I'm not able to go to school? Does this mean I'm not going to be getting Social Security? Does this mean I'm not going to be getting those things that I've worked hard for?
No, the country's strong enough, and we do have members of Congress and members of the Senate that are good people. And I don't believe that that would happen. I did serve in Congress for 21 years. Mm-hmm. I served in the minority. I served in the majority. Majorities are much better, by the way. I also served when the president was a Republican and both houses were Republican. But, you know, there's enough checks and balances there to make sure that certain things don't happen. Now, Donald Trump is trying to do what they call a recess appointment, which means that when the Senate is in recess, he can put anybody he wants in. I do believe that they're going to be fighting that because some of the people he wants to put in, I think some good senators. There are some good people in the Republican. They're good people everywhere in the Republican mm-hmm. Democrat, and I believe that that will be able to withstand. And you know, the problem with Congress, when I first went there, we were in a minority. But we got along. We got along with the Republicans, and you know, look, we voted our ideals, and they voted their ideals. But we did make arrangements with each other to get things done for the American people. And then it got to be where they had what they call the Freedom Party and the Republicans, and they would fight with each other, and they would block everything they could block, and we probably couldn't get much done. We almost had the government shut down. And then now we have that on our side, on the Democratic side. Democrats are fighting amongst themselves. So you got Republicans fighting, you got Democrats fighting, you know, in Congress, and the American people suffer for that. We need to get back to some congeniality, some working together for the betterment of the American people. I mean, how are you going to hurt Social Security with people that worked all their lives and paid? It's their money and paid mm-hmm. into it. You know,
I know
our seniors,
right.
They live on a fixed income as it is already. How do you want to hurt that? And what do you want to do with education? We all talk, that was part of the issues too in the election. We need to educate our young people. We need to make sure that they have the proper education and the opportunity to have the proper education. So how are you going to cut that? I don't believe that some of them outstanding, some of them exorbitant things that you talk about that may be on the table, I don't believe that they'll happen. I really, really don't. And I pray to God that they don't, because, again, it's not servicing all the American people.
Wow. Mm. I love the way that you put that in. And I'm glad that you explained that even though you served at a time when there was a Republican president mm-hmm. and a Republican House and Senate, you all were still able to get along. And I think negotiation is key and necessary, particularly in these times. Sometimes I think we get stuck on just our idea and we don't budge.
Yeah.
And there has to be some kind of compromise, because I don't think everybody's going to always get what they want, but they have to be able to look for the common good. In closing, Mr. Chairman, for Philadelphia, we had an election last year where there was a little bit of low turnout. We have an election next year. What is it that you and I know you said the city commissioners are doing all they can, and you as the Democratic chair, you oversee and you lead the chairs and, of course, the ward leaders in the city of Philadelphia to hopefully do. What can we do to get people up off the couch? What can we say? What is needed to make us move?
I wish I had that answer. We're doing, as you said, with the drop boxes all over the city. We're doing everything we can. And we got every 6 months comes an election. We got a pretty important election coming up in 6 months. We have our district attorney that's running. We have our city controller that's running. We have anywhere from 7 to 10 to 11 judges that are running. We have two statewide judges that are running, and they're important positions. They're important yeah. spots, and people just need to know that if you don't vote, you really don't count. And most of the people that do it are hollering and screaming about it are probably some of the ones that are sitting on that couch eating their bonbons. I mean, you don't have any time to sit on the couch, but I don't know what to do about it. We've been fighting that for years, you know, trying to get people, making life easier with the mail-in ballots, making life easier with the drop boxes all over the city. And I guess people, if they're disgusted about something, then come out and voice your opinion. There's got to be somebody on the ballot that you like. And then then also we have what they call retention judges coming up in November. You got a chance to vote no. If you want to get out there and not like somebody, you have a chance to vote no against retention judges. And what to do, we look, this election was so much publicity. As you well know, thank God my Texas are stopping. Thank God I'm not looking for promotions anymore. But God knows everybody, and you all know that, everybody in the world knows it. we all know there was an election. So why don't, you know, I don't know why people just don't, given the right that they have, that our forefathers fought for and died for, to be able to get us out there, let the women vote, let the African-Americans vote, let everybody vote. You know, it makes no sense that they don't exercise that right that they have, that people, again, died for. I don't understand that myself, to be honest.
Well, I thank you for that. Yes. In conclusion, you were, of course, serving with John Lewis, who was who his act is, of course, coming up to hopefully the Voting Rights Act. Would you share one good thing about him in memory that is something you cherish in a moment with him?
There were so many good things about John Lewis. By the way, he was my best friend. I first went to Congress, and people could pull this up when they had the Inquirer magazine, and they asked me about who was my favorite person in Congress. And I said, John Lewis. He was my buddy. Michael, his chief of staff, was my buddy. When John Lewis got the Medal of Freedom in Philadelphia, so he said to me, hey, Bob, he said, you know, I'm coming to Philly. Where's a good place to stay? Where should I stay? I said, it's a great place to stay. 7028 Brentwood Road, my house.
And he stayed. Wow.
He was just a great man and a great friend. You know, me, when I was chairman of House Administration down there, we would have our interns, and every year when the interns would leave, like, well, they would leave like three times a year because they had like three sets, and we would address them. And every year I had John Lewis address them, and they loved him. He's just a great man, you know. And he was the guy that, you know, I like when he said, he quoted, and you know, I'm sure, good trouble. Let's get into good trouble.
Yes.
He was not, as you all know, not a man that advocated violence, but he was just a very, 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 very well-respected man. And they had the John Lewis building. We had a major hard time even getting that through. So, you know, I don't think there's anywhere John Lewis is on the horizon. There really isn't. But he was a great friend and my dear friend. Like I said, you pulled up the Inquirer magazine. I think it was like 1999 or something. I said that my best friend is John Lewis. And in speeches, he called me his best friend. And believe me, I tell you, I get chills just thinking about that right now. What a great man he was, and a great friend.
Thank you so much for that.
Thank you so much.
Excellent memory, and we're going to cherish it, and it is here in stone.
That's right.
On the Bishop Mary
That's
Show.
Right.
So you were able to give tribute to your great friend, mm-hmm. and we certainly do hope that we'll be able to make some strides, even if it looks like it's hopeless. I know that John Lewis will say, it ain't over till it's over, baby. So keep
good
on
trouble.
Good trouble.
Good trouble. Thank you again,
thank
Mr.
You so
Chairman.
Much.
We hope to have you back as we
thank
talk about the upcoming election that we're going to have. We have a primary, please. And we have an election, and I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Make it a great
God
day,
sir.
God
and my
bless
uncle
you.
Said he's going to talk to you real soon.
Okay. God
all
bless
right.
you all. Thank
God
you.
God bless
for
you.
Having me.
Bye-bye. And that
you.
Was
bye
our bye. So long. That was our chairman
yes,
of the Democratic
that's
City
right.
Committee. None other. Come
then,
on, somebody. Then the former Congressman Bob Brady, the honorable one.
The honorable one.
Yes.
Let's
and
get it
he
right.
gave us some good post-election pointers, and we're going to try to encourage all of you to take your voting. Mm-hmm. Power seriously.
It's very serious. It can change a lot of things.
It can really change a lot of things. Well, up next, we're going to have Dr. Michael Jackson of the Miriam Medical Clinic,
yes.
who will be sharing with us about diabetes. Stay tuned.
And all these things.
we're excited to have back on the Bishop Mary Show by popular demand and by request, Dr. Michael Johnson, who is of Miriam Medical Center, I believe, located in South Philadelphia. They have been around for a little while, and he is here to discuss a very important topic, one that is prevalent in the African-American community. Here with me is my co-host, Brother Marcus. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Good morning, Bishop Mary. It's so good to be back and to see you and to see the good doctor.
Absolutely. And good morning, doctor. How are you?
I'm very well, by God's grace. Thank you.
Absolutely. Would you mind sharing with us a little bit about your medical center?
So Miriam Medical Clinics was founded. It's about 10 years old now. My wife and I and some partners, Dr. Pitts and his wife, saw a need for primary health care in the city that ministered primarily to people who were underserved. And we've been serving as a free health clinic for the past 10 years. You don't have to have any insurance. If you have insurance, we'll see you, but it doesn't really matter. We are faith-based. Mm. We're presently on 20th and Tasker Street in South Philadelphia, associated with our church, Tasker Street Missionary Baptist Church. But we're primary care. We provide a range of services that a primary care physician would provide. We do blood pressure. We do diabetes, cholesterol management. We take care to screen people for any variety of illnesses. And when appropriate, we do refer them to the necessary counsel. But we are primary care. We take care of people from any age. There's no age limit. Most of our people are adults. We do physical exams and you know, some eye screening, but that's what we do. So we've been doing that on our present site for the past 3 years on 20th and Tasker. Again, it's a faith-based. We're supported by donors, and we see anybody. It doesn't really matter, insurance or not insurance.
Wow, that is wonderful. And I do recall when I first was introduced to you by our past president, Robert Collier, who had you to come and share with
right.
the Black Clergy of Philadelphia,
right.
where I serve as the parliamentarian. So it recalled to me, and I'm so grateful and hope that we'll be able to call on your expertise, not only now, but in the future, particularly in the Bishop Mary Show on topics of health that are important to our community. Today, we're going to be talking
yes.
about diabetes. Which is prevalent in the African-American community. And this is November, Diabetes Awareness Month. Would you simply explain what diabetes is?
Well, we have come under the mistaken notion that diabetes is an inevitable course of aging or life. And that's far from the case. Put it simply, most diabetes in America is, and I would say, 90 plus percent of it is because of lifestyle. We eat ourselves into diabetes.
Mm.
So there are about 38 million Americans who have diabetes, 11% of the population. 2 million of those Americans have type 1 diabetes. And by type 1, I mean diabetes that is caused by a genetic absence, something that happens within their genes that either destroys or underdevelops the pancreas, which is the organ responsible for secreting insulin. So, but 90 plus percent of the population has type 2 diabetes, which is caused by what we eat and how we eat and our other lifestyles. Of note is that in youth, 352,000 youth under the age of 20 are estimated to have diabetes. And the proportion of those who are developing type 2 diabetes is on the increase. So this is again speaks to our lifestyles. This is something that I hope we can address, and I would hope that as people come see us in our clinic, we can talk more about that. The rates of diabetes within the United States, it varies from ethnic groups, with about 14% those being American Indians, Alaskan, Native adults, but 12% of non-Hispanic Black adults account for diabetes. And you go all the way down to less than 7% of whites, non-Hispanic whites, have diabetes. So we have the lion's share. We're 12% of the population. We have 12% of the diabetes, but that should not be that proportionate. So we far outnumber in terms of percentage-wise what we should have in diabetes. Again, it's related to lifestyle, diabetes, et cetera, et cetera. It is the eighth leading cause of death. Diabetes is the eighth leading cause of death in the United States. It causes 103,294 deaths, which diabetes is listed as the underlying cause of death. So diabetes is mentioned as a cause of death in over 400,000 death certificates. So it is the eighth leading cause of death. It costs about $400 billion to care for diabetes in the United States. So after adjusting for all of these things, people with diabetes are 2.6 times higher in terms of costs, healthcare costs. So I guess we can define diabetes, unless you have questions for me on those statistics.
No, Brother Marcus.
Yeah, I do have a question for you. Yeah. In the African American community, who is most at risk? Is it Black men or Black women? And if so, how do we fix it?
Well, that's a great question. It's almost equally dispersed, but I would say women more commonly, because women metabolisms tends to be slower, and diabetes is driven by or impacted by your metabolism. So since women's metabolism tends to be slower, they don't burn the calories that they take in as easily, and so women are disproportionately affected. But it's a small variation. The bottom line is people of color have a disproportionate burden of disease.
Doctor, sometimes we hear about diabetic neuropathy. What is it, and how is it maintained?
So in general, diabetes, again, is caused by the body's inability to use glucose, which is the main fuel for body metabolism. When you eat anything, it goes through the gut, it's absorbed through the intestines, goes to the liver, where it is converted into glucose through a process called glycolysis. And that allows those food products, protein, fats, carbohydrates, all of those are used to convert into energy for glucose. And that's what the body needs, that's what the cells need to function. When that remains persistently high, when the blood sugar remains persistently high, it causes an effect on the circulation and the microcirculation, the small arterioles, small capillaries. And those capillaries include those that go to the nerve cells. And so those nerve cells become destroyed because of the effect of the blood sugar on the small blood vessels. And so the nerve cells die, basically. Mm. They die, but they also become hypersensitive to pain. And so that's the diabetic neuropathy. You lose some sensation, and that loses the ability to tell when you've injured your extremity, but also results in a constant burning sensation. So a diabetic neuropathy can develop principally in the extremities and the lower extremities, and it causes intense burning, but also a numbness where you cannot tell when you stepped on a pin or bumped your foot. So, there are two types of diabetes. So again, type one is congenital, and that is we talk about insulin-dependent diabetes. Children who are born with diabetes or who acquire diabetes early in life, that is type one, and that is caused by the pancreas' inability to secrete adequate insulin. Type two diabetes, which is most of what we're talking about in America, is the fact that the blood sugars have remained so high for so long a period of time that the receptors, the all of the cells in the body have a receptor for insulin. That way, when we eat, our pancreas secretes insulin, and our the receptors in all of those cells sense the insulin, and they absorb the blood sugar. They absorb glucose, and some of that glucose is absorbed into the muscles, and much of it is absorbed into the liver. But after a while, the blood sugar remains so high, those insulin receptors stop working. The body just gets overwhelmed with high blood sugar, and then you go on to develop type 2 diabetes, which is the non-congenital thing. That's the one that we deal with mostly.
You did mention...
Now, I know we touched on this a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Brother Marcus. Oh,
go ahead, Bishop Mary. I'm sorry.
No. Go ahead. And I'll ask the last question. Go ahead.
I know you... Okay. I know you did touch on juvenile diabetes. If it is hereditary, what can we do to combat? What do we do?
Well, again, juvenile onset or type 1 diabetes, there's really not a preventative measure because it happens from birth. They are born with a defect in the pancreas's ability to secrete insulin. Mm. And so they have it. And those are, you'll find people who are on insulin pumps, young people who have insulin pumps from the pretty much the time that they are born, or very early on. There's no prevention for that. There's treatment for that, and the treatment is becoming more affordable of late. It used to be essentially a death sentence, but there is treatment for it. They are insulin dependent because their pancreas does not produce insulin. Mm-hmm. But again, the majority of us, the majority of the diabetes that we see is a type 2 diabetes, and it's due to what we call a it's associated with a metabolic syndrome. People who have high blood pressure, systolic blood pressure is over 130, obesity with a waist size for women of over 35 and over 40 for men, fasting blood sugars higher than 100 milligrams per deciliter, high cholesterol, high triglycerides. And so there is some genetic component to type 2 diabetes, but the most of it is due to our lifestyle. We eat, we don't exercise.
And I was going to ask you that some of the things that you just mentioned certainly are how we can better manage it for someone who suddenly finds out that they are pre-diabetic. I'm understanding that by taking care, monitoring your weight, changing your food, eating habits, improvement in mobility in your lifestyle are some things externally that can help you manage it. A lot of folks are now pre-diabetic, and so there is a way for them to kind of step back from being diagnosed with diabetes, and I'm grateful for that. We are so grateful that you have been with us. We are so thankful that you have shared some very pertinent information about diabetes, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to call on you again to talk to us about other medical issues that are prevalent, particularly in the African-American community. Would you mind sharing again your location and a contact number in case folks want to be in touch with you and are interested in your services?
Sure. We are Miriam Medical Clinics. Miriam was, for those of you who are familiar, that was Moses' sister in the Old Testament. And Miriam Medical Clinics, in fact, that's a derivation of the name Mary as well. Miriam Medical Clinics, 2006 Tasker Street. That's in South Philadelphia, 2006 Tasker Street. It's right next to Tasker Street Missionary Baptist Church, which owns the building and owns the clinic.
Wow.
We are a free clinic. The phone number is 215-644-8745. 215-644-8745, Miriam Medical Clinics.
Thank you so much, Dr. Johnson. And would you close with a favorite scripture or quote that keeps you grounded in doing the service that you provide to those who are in need?
Well, my favorite is something that we learned Matthew 6:33, seek the kingdom first and all these things will be added unto you. Our walk has been a walk of faith. We built this clinic as a walk of faith. Our donors have contributed through a walk of faith. We had no money to do this. People just gave. And that's what it's been. So Matthew 6:33, seek the kingdom first. Everything else will be added unto you. Just like this show has been added unto us, and we are able to seek the kingdom. We want people to be healthy, wanting to live not just a long life, but a healthy life. And as we seek the kingdom, God has been doing things in our lives. And hopefully this will manifest in the lives of everyone who hears this today.
Absolutely. So on behalf of my co-host, Brother Marcus, who joined us, and certainly on behalf and you, Doc, we thank you. And we certainly hope that you'll grace us again. We appreciate your time. Yes. Be safe and certainly be thank well. You. Grateful for Dr. Michael Johnson. Now we're going to talk sports. But this time, it's not a moment. It's not a minute.
Not a minute, not a moment.
It's the interview. Because we are halfway through a season and we need to hear from our expert.
That's
none
right.
None other than, yes, I'm going to say it, my firstborn son. Known sports as Sports Talk, Terry.
How you
morning,
doing, man?
I'm all right. How are you guys?
Good,
all
good.
Right. You all right, sir? I figured you'd be hyped.
I'm great.
Oh, okay.
Okay. All right.
Well, respectfully, for the record, I cover Eagles, but I'm not a fan. So I have an unbiased opinion. I'm always going to give it to you straight regardless.
Okay. All right.
Let's, let's talk about it.
All right. Why don't you give us the sports update for Philly, and then we'll talk specifically about each of these teams. And my producer, Matt, will be jumping in here because he's Phillies, Eagles, Flyers.
All of that.
Yeah.
All of
Phillies,
that.
Phillies, Eagles, Flyers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, obviously, in a football town, Philadelphia during football season is heavy, heavy, heavy Eagles. So, we can start there. Obviously, the Eagles had a Thursday night game against the Redskins, who at that point were first place in the division. So it was a big matchup to determine who would take over first place and have that spot pretty much hand in stone, so to speak, so that way they could kind of dictate how the rest of the season plays out. It was a raucous crowd down at the link. Obviously, Jaden Daniels, who's been a rookie sensation this year and may have given the Redskins their first true franchise quarterback in, I don't know, ever, has played very well. Dan Quinn, second time around as a head football coach, looks like he's figured out some things from his first stint in Atlanta. They have a good ground game, good receivers who've always been there, solid defense. The game was close early. The Eagles didn't look very good. Jalen Hurts did not play particularly well in the first half. But in the second half, going with the ground game, leaning on your superstar offseason acquisition of Saquon Barkley. He put two big touchdowns together late in the game to kind of seal the deal for the Eagles. They had no answer on how to stop him, which has kind of been the theme all year. Funny enough, Jalen Hurts went 18 for 28, 221. No touchdowns, no picks, but also no turnovers, which is huge. But he also, they call him a TD vulture. He took another touchdown from Saquon. He had a touchdown on the ground and Saquon had two with 146 yards on 26 carries. That said, a fun fact stack that a lot of people don't know. If you look at every touchdown that Saquon Barkley has had that is stopped outside of the 2 yard line and that they gave him the ball, he would have scored. He'd lead the NFL in touchdowns. But that's how many Jalen Hurts has because he knew the tush push. So when people think, oh, Saquon's not having that great of a year and Derrick Henry's playing better, in context, yes, but if you were to give him the ball with the same opportunities that Derrick Henry has at the goal line, he'd lead the league in touchdowns and easily be runaway favorite for the MVP. So having him has really done a huge boost to that roster, really giving them that piece that they were missing, that guy in the fourth quarter who you can put the game on his back and he can take it over, which he's done so well. And then the Eagles being healthy, they got Mailata back, Lane Johnson's back. A.J. Brown was out early. He's back. These guys were key pieces of the offense that Jalen Hurts needed to be successful, and you can see how much better the offense looks with those guys in the lineup. From the defensive side of the ball, Zach Bond has been an absolute light in the dark room at the linebacker position. The last great linebacker that the Eagles had, you have to go back to T.J. Edwards a few years ago. I mean, he's come in and literally done everything you could expect, 14 tackles. I mean, that is just insane from an Eagles linebacker. You just don't hear it very often. Mm-hmm. And what 14 tackles tells you is that if he's making those plays at his level, those guys aren't getting to the secondary, which is where the Eagles have trouble. You know, they're not having a lot of safety tackles, which is a good thing for a defense. That means the ball's not getting past the second level, which is the linebacker level. N'Kobe Dean has also been playing well. He begged for an opportunity to just be on the field, be healthy. That's all people wanted to see. He was a stud coming out of Georgia. Couldn't stay healthy his first few years, but now you're seeing what a healthy N'Kobe Dean looks like. You hope that the Eagles re-sign Zach Bond, keep him around because he is clearly a call for that defense. I think one of the best linebacker acquisitions that they've had in recent memory. I mean, you'd have to go back to the years of guys like Carlos Emmons, you know, who played with the Eagles in the early 2000s in the Reed regime, to kind of find those guys that they bring in that are like monster plug-and-play guys who do everything well. So he's been a huge piece for them. And then lastly, in the secondary, you can't say enough about Quinyon Mitchell, the rookie guy that they took in the first round.
Yeah.
He came from a small college. He's played absolutely lights out. Seth Joyner, personal friend. We've done shows together. He actually said, listen, Quinyon Mitchell might be top three D-back in the NFL right now as a rookie 10 games in, which is insane to imagine. But he's playing that good.
Wow.
Did you know that he hasn't given up a single touchdown this year as a D-back on assignment? Not one.
Ooh.
And he's lined up against the number one wide receiver on every team they face.
Wow.
So it just speaks to his skill set. Great job out of front office in scouting him and drafting him. And good job on the teams that passed over him. I mean, you might have literally the next Darrell Revis, you know, Jalen Ramsey in his prime kind of guy over there, that lockdown corner. You can't throw to his side. They've already got nicknames for him, Quinyanimo Bay, you know, because he's lockdown city over there. You cannot throw to his side of the field. Cooper DeJean being able to play both D-back and special teams and do it at a high level. Another guy that the Eagles were projected to take in the first round, he fell to them in the second. They got him at a steal, and he's been plug and play and done everything right. And it's just the difference of having talent on a football roster matters, because the spots of weakness for the Eagles have clearly been fixed and rectified by getting players that fix those problems. And now the team looks a lot better.
And you were talking, of course, about the youngin. I want to call him the youngin. And, and having that, what would that mean? Is there a possibility? I know that Matt wants the Eagles to win. I know the city is looking for yet another Super Bowl championship.
Producer, I want to know what the producer has to say. Matt, what you got going?
Oh, yeah. It's hard to dispute the success that they're having on this defense when nobody thought that they'd be anywhere close to as successful as they are. And I think all the credit, or most of the credit, needs to go to Vic Fangio, the defensive coordinator. He was brought in to come in. The previous defensive coordinators ran a Vic Fangio-style defense, but they couldn't perfect it. Well, they have the master in right now, and he's getting the best out of all these players, especially the linebackers, like Terry mentioned. I mean, that was one of the biggest weaknesses, and now it's one of the biggest strengths in the defense. And you can't say enough about Quinyon Mitchell. Like you said, he's played 10 games in his NFL career, and he's already doing things that Darrell Revis has done in his prime when Nnamdi Osman, when he was with the Raiders, that's the type of nobody was throwing his way. And that's why the Eagles got him. Well, he was a bust here. But, it's hard to dispute. You know, every week this defense is getting better. And, you know, and they're young. That's the biggest thing. They are so young that this core is going to be together for years to come. And it's going to be fun to watch.
It's going to be fun to watch. So what do you think, Terry, is going to take? What is the strategy that the Eagles have to keep them on the road to
the Super Bowl?
Well, what do you think? Can it happen?
So the thing is, the Eagles have had a pretty favorable schedule. I mean, outside of the Bengals, they only played one, maybe two other teams that this year that would be considered playoff teams, and Atlanta and Green Bay, and those were early in the year. Just about everybody else they played is probably not going to make the playoffs. So, I mean, it doesn't say much. You know, the Redskins obviously were that team as well. It doesn't say much that, you know, they beat up on the teams they're supposed to. The next couple of games they have coming up, well, you got to understand, they've got the Rams who are playing good football right now. They've got the Ravens, which is going to be a marquee matchup because the Ravens are a top two team in the AFC and now hold first place in the AFC North. And then they've got the Steelers, the team that the Ravens beat. who have been defensively stout all year. And that's going to be a good matchup of a good offense versus a great defense with T.J. Watt and company. You know, they're holding folks, you know, literally to teen and single digit points per game. And they're winning with field goals even when they can't score touchdowns. I mean, they won the game taking all field goals yesterday. They lost the game taking all field goals. So it's one of those things where when you're playing football and you're seeing what's going on, what's happening, you know, you got to be prepared to watch and see what's happening when you're playing these folks, how the team reacts and responds to it. And I think those games, then they have the Redskins again, are going to be critical. They come out of that five-game stretch, you know, ahead of it, and they're in a good position. Then now you can start to talk about, well, you know, now there's a good chance that they could compete in the NFC for the Super Bowl, because the team ahead of them is the Detroit Lions, who've been the bee's knees all year. Jared Goff is playing lights out, MVP-level Super Bowl, leading type offense. I mean, they're putting up a ton of points per game, and their defense is bringing it every single week. That defense is legit. That was the one thing that Dan Campbell, the head coach, you know, insisted on building the team to be aggressive and to get after it. He was the coach who a couple years ago said, oh, they're going to bite you at the knees, which was kind of creepy when he said it. But, you know, he's absolutely brought it every single week since he's been the head coach. And their team has owned that energy and that moniker and lived up to it. So that's one of the things I would say. That would be the team you have to go through, whether you're at home or at the link, or you're away in Detroit. You know, you're going to have to see them if you're going to come out of the NFC. San Francisco's falling off. Green Bay, you've already beaten. So that would be the biggest obstacle for them to come out of the NFC. And a lot of people are liking Detroit right now because they have all the same weapons that the Eagles have on offense, and they have a stout defense. A lot of people like Dan Campbell as a coach better than Nick Sirianni, which could be the difference when plays come down to, you know, those split, you know, those split second game-changing decisions. So that would be the thing in terms of coming out the NFC. And then when you get to the Super Bowl, obviously, you know, all roads are going to go through Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City. He doesn't lose in the playoffs when it matters. And so you beat him. Nobody can really talk about being Super Bowl favorites. You have to be able to beat him. It doesn't matter who he has out there. But getting there obviously gives them a chance like they had a few years ago. And if Jalen outplays him again with this lineup, with this roster, I think the Eagles could win.
Wow. Mm. So we can cross our fingers and our toes and hope that, as you have projected or you're hoping will be the case for the strategy for the Eagles to become champions. Now, and of course, we're talking about the Sixers.
Yeah, so let's talk about it. Sports Talk, Terry, what you got, man?
Well, the lone bright spot is rookie Jarrett McCain has been playing great basketball for the Sixers. Obviously, Embiid has had his own host of issues trying to get back. I mean, he made some comments over the summer about he's not going to play back-to-backs anymore, you know, which made a lot of folks angry. But I tell people that the man hasn't played back-to-backs in like 10 years. Like, I don't understand why people are so upset about this. But meanwhile, when you look at the way that the Sixers are setting it up, I mean, Embiid had 29 points. He had 20 points, 8 rebounds. McCain had 29 points. Led the team in scoring. Paul George, who was this big offseason acquisition, you know, he's looking a lot like Tobias Harris. For all the folks that ripped Tobias Harris, I mean, he scored 13 in 36 minutes. He wasn't brought here to score, you know, 13 points, 14 points. He's brought here to score 20, 25 to be that difference maker. And yes, they haven't had Maxie, George, and Embiid on the floor at the same time, but Paul George was a bucket before he got to the Sixers. And the fact that he hasn't been able to replicate that, whether it's fitting into the scheme or the style, whatever the case may be, you know, they got 4 more years in him, and he's only getting older and can't stay healthy. That's a problem. Embiid has never been healthy, and you're asking him to try to stay healthy. That's a problem. And now Maxie, who's been predominantly healthy, is injured. This team is only as good as their stars are healthy, and that's the facts. I mean, they're sitting at 2-10 at the bottom of the conference. McCain is the lone bright spot. And as hard as it sounds for folks to hear, with the talent coming out in this next draft, I wouldn't be surprised if they fall too far down. You know, they might just tank the year. Let Embiid get fully healthy. You know, let Paul George learn how to fit into the scheme and then try to take a high pick and get into the draft and try to get somebody, make a move, trade somebody to get those top 2 or 3 picks. There's a lot of kids coming up that are going to be really good. Cooper Flagg is the one that everybody's talking about getting. He's the 2024 version of Christian Laettner. So folks are salivating at getting a chance to get him. But Carlos Boozer's sons may come out. There's a lot of good talent in this draft early in the top 5 or 6 picks where you can get a franchise-altering piece, and you plug him into that roster, And now all of a sudden the Sixers have a three or four headed monster. So that when Embiid needs nights off, Paul George can't play, your offense isn't struggling to score points like they look right now. But that's the biggest problem with them. They went out and got all these guys, all of them are mostly older guys, back into their careers. You know, Eric Gordon, you know, Kyle Lowry. I mean, these guys are, you know, Andre Drummond. These are guys that have been around the league. They've been around for a long time. They got a ton of miles on their tires. You know, when you're asking them to come in and be.
You shoot from the hip, huh?
Hey, listen, this is the truth. You know, you bring them in, but at the end of the day, they're there to be complimentary. They're not there to be stars. They're not going to give you 25, 30 points a game. You know, they're not going to give you, you know, 22 points and 25 rebounds, you know, like an Embiid can, you know. So this is what you need. You need your stars to be stars. You know, Nick Nurse has a heck of a coaching job to do if he's going to get this roster competitive with guys constantly out of the lineup. But, you know, that's the route that they went. You know, you're starting to hear rumblings that a lot of folks are tired of Embiid. People think that Embiid should have been traded a couple years ago. I called it. I said you should have traded him 3 years ago. They got top value for him, but they're like, oh, you don't trade an MVP. You don't trade an MVP. Listen, people get traded in the NBA every day. And the way the NBA
let it go.
Yeah, you got to. And my Teddy T voice, listen, at the end of the day, if you can't win with him, you have to move from him and get somebody who's going to help you win. And so the problem with Embiid is his style of play doesn't fit what today's NBA is. You know, it's a guard-heavy league. And outside of Joker, when's the last time a center won an NBA title? I mean, you got to go back to, like, Shaq. I mean, that was the early 2000s. Like, I'm being honest. Like, you know, it's like, what are we doing? Like, I mean, he's a great second option, but he can't be your first option. Joker's the only one who broke the norm, but Joker is an offensive guy who has more all-around basketball throw on the offensive end because he's a pass-first center. He can get his own shot anytime he wants to, but he looks to distribute. Right. And he's a shoot-first center. Right. He's not looking to set guys up, which is why he doesn't have 10 assist games like Joker does every night. You know, he's putting up video game numbers because he can average a triple-double in his sleep. You know, and yet he can't jump over a piece of paper. Like, it's crazy.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Sports Talk Terry. His views and opinions does not reflect the Bishop Mary Show or Brother Mark.
Oh, man.
Yo, bro, I'm going to say this live on the radio. I absolutely love you, man. Real talk, true story. Yo, you are so thorough with what you do with Philly sports and all that great stuff, man.
Absolutely.
We appreciate you being with us.
And we're
day,
so
man.
Glad we're going to have you come back when we break in into the Flyers and talk about the Phillies.
Come in, man.
And, you know, we're going to have to do it again as we wrap up our show for today. We want to send congratulations to moderator Eric Good, him and his entire cabinet, Reverend William Scott, who was vice moderator at large. Their business meeting service occurred last night, and they were reelected to their positions for a second term. And when I tell you that Negro preaching was ridiculous, he lit the place on fire. I don't care what they say, Baptist, it was Pentecostal up in there. I'm crazy to Freddie Bowers, who led the Pepka choir. So we're so grateful, and we want to wish them congratulations, of course.
Congratulations.
And thanks to Cardinal David Hartman Davenport, who came from Long Island and gave us a wonderful training over the weekend. So it's been fun. And as always, this is what we say.
That's right.
We want to thank you because you can get your sports moment here live on the Bishop Mary Show weekly by Sports Talk Terry, who is Sports Talk Terry on all social media. And then, of course, as I close out, I say, if you can't be good, be careful.
Be careful.
And if you can't be careful, then don't do it. It may not be worth it.
It may not be worth it.
Until next week for another family show here on the Bishop Mary Show. Stay well and be blessed.
Thanks for tuning in to another dynamic show with Bishop Mary. To contact Bishop Mary, call 833-722-4748. That's 833-722-4748. And she'll get right back to you. Remember, let the healing begin with you. See you next week for another great time together on the Bishop Mary Show.